Good evening and welcome to the LSE Literary Festival. My name's Charlie Beckett. I'm a professor in the Department of Media and Communications here at the LSE. I also run a think tank called Polis, which is a think tank about international journalism. And quite some time ago, I used to be a journalist, not on newspapers, though. I'm very pleased to have two speakers here tonight, one of whom is the editor of the Times Literary Supplement. That's Stig Abel, just here to my left. Stig previously worked at The Sun as the managing editor of The Sun, and before that was the director of the Press Complaints Council, which does not exist anymore, or has been transmogrified. Now, the sharp-eyed amongst you will have spotted that is not Janine Gibson. Janine is very, very sorry, but literally in the last couple of hours has had to cancel coming because of illness. And that's very sad, but I'm very, very pleased that she's managed to get Jim Waterson, who's the political editor of BuzzFeed, to stand in. I was tempted to try and get him to come in drag, but unfortunately you have an all-male panel. But so sorry about that, but that's the end of the apologies. Tonight we're going to be talking about newspapers in particular, and perhaps journalism in general, because I think it's become quite a hot topic, just for journalists, but for anybody who cares about the way that we understand what's happening in this rather interesting world that we live in. But what actually sort of made me come up with this idea for this event was an article that Stig wrote, I think, in December in the New York Times, Britain's paper tigers, trying to explain to an American or global audience, you know, what happened to this great news media, this press in the UK. And it's, you know, we are only a few hundred meters from Fleet Street, which, as Stig refers to in the article, doesn't have any newspapers there. There may be journalists still, you know, hanging out at the Cheshire Cheese or something, but it doesn't have any newspapers. So things have definitely changed. And it was a beautiful article, and I'm going to... It was beautiful. It was beautiful. It wasn't just erudite and thoughtful. It was very nicely written. I was so surprised by it. No.
but I take a compliment. So nice.
But Stig said a couple of things in this this article that... Because one thing, I think there's... How many of you have ever, especially, I don't know, in the wake of Brexit, for example, in the wake of Trump, how many of you the phrase "I blame the media" crossed your lips? You know, so there's still this sense that the media, and in the UK particularly, that newspapers are particularly influential. And Stig writes, quote, "Britain's decision to leave the European was, from one angle, a final Pyrrhic victory for British print journalism. Its fiercely partisan, predominantly right-wing newspapers had come out in support of Brexit. This was only to be expected. The mood of the country, outside of its cosmopolitan capital and Europhile Scotland, was stridently anti-immigration and pro-nationalism. Newspapers were both feeding and responding to that phenomenon." So in a sense, you were saying, Stig, that newspapers still have a residual power to somehow, if not dominate the conversation, to direct it.
I think it is residual. I mean, I think it's probably always been overstated,
right,
the power of newspapers. And it is residual. I think newspapers still have the ability to point in the way that the nation is feeling. And papers like The Sun and The Mail, I suppose, they know their audience. Their audience is dwindling in terms of people who are willing to pay money for a physical property like a newspaper. Their audience is increasing in the sense of their digital reach, which for both of those papers, now The Sun, which is no longer behind a paywall, is the second most read national newspaper, I saw today by Comscore. The Daily Mail is effectively a large US celebrity website with a small British print arm, which is kind of extraordinary change in the last sort of 5 to 10 years. And the problem the Mail have, the problem that everyone has, is despite being that great, large, international internet organization, it can't monetize that audience the same way it can people buying a newspaper. So the turnover for the Mail and the Mail on Sunday print copies, despite ever reducing, still outperforms that from digital advertising, and that's never really going to change. The basic law of economics, supply and demand, the internet is infinite, advertising space is infinite, therefore you're never going to increase your yields from purely display advertising. Now, there's things like native advertising, which is more BuzzFeed's realm, where there's a possibility to change that a bit, but ultimately, the advertising free model for journalism is kind of screwed. So the Mail has a great reach, it has a great audience, it can't really monetize it. The place that monetizes everything on the internet is Google and Facebook. We might talk about that influence on journalism. So the print model has completely changed. It's completely changed beyond recognition over the last 10 years. And it used to be a license to print money, and now it isn't. The people who have this license to print money are Facebook and Google. So newspapers have this residual power in that there's something about a hard copy artifact that carries with it a certain weight. It influences broadcasters, as you will know, in the sense of it points to a certain tone of national conversation. But the power's probably always been overstated. People didn't vote for Brexit because the Mail and the Sun told them so. The Mail and the Sun pushed Brexit because it felt very clearly that their readers wanted Brexit. And there's a kind of symbiosis.
Just think about that. This is sort of going back a little bit then, perhaps, to when you were at the Sun. How much do you think that newspapers who have got proprietors, who have got political views, they have got editors, you know, in the case of Dacre, for example, very strong ideological sense of the world. How much do you think they do actually push an agenda? Because, you know, 15 years ago, there were very few Eurosceptic MPs. Now it's the other way round. How much was that being led by Sun readers who were furious with agricultural subsidies or something, and wanted to take back control?
It's very hard to know. Are readers angry because newspapers are whipping them up, or newspapers whipping up because they're angry? And like I said, there's a kind of mutual relationship there. In the end, places like The Sun, I wasn't there for Brexit, but places like The Sun employ editors who have a certain ideological view that matches that of the proprietor. Marina Hyde wrote a big piece about how the influence of proprietors work, and very seldom is it necessarily a diktat from on high, you must cover this story in this way. It employs often like-minded people or people with a political sense either of their own or of what they believe their readers to want. And Sun readers, there was lots of polling of it, they voted for Brexit in a very high number. If the Sun had pushed a Remain agenda to that audience, it would have been a disastrous thing commercially. Now, that's not to say that people connected to making those decisions didn't believe it as well. I think it is this sort of strange symbiotic relationship. Now, whether the nature of the newspapers led to Brexit, I think the more we look at how the world is operating, this anti-elitist feeling that subsists outside of the cities. You know, if you look at France, 60% of people in France live in small towns and villages away from the big metropolitan areas. That's fertile Le Pen country. Trump wins in places like Wisconsin, which you wouldn't expect him to win. There's an anti-professional, anti-elite view of the world, which I think is spreading. And that's nothing to do with the British media or the US media or the media more generally. I think there is something of a zeitgeist there of sorts, which then places like The Sun and The Mail tap into. I don't think you could give them the credit of creating it.
Yeah. There's just another quote from this lovely article you wrote. You said, quote, many newspapers have become living relics, pale and attenuated, struggling to be significant. The Daily Mirror, a left-leaning tabloid, was once a prominent socialist voice selling more than 3 million copies. Circulation is now well below 1 million, heralding a downward spiral of staff cuts, reliance on news agency copy and articles siphoned from social media, and an enfeebled voice. The Daily Express, once a serious paper, is no more than an incontinent shriek of made-up facts about health and immigration. See, beautifully written. What I think is interesting about that is it that the newspapers were actually in decline themselves? And in a sense, it just sort of coincided with the rise of social media, that it's not so much BuzzFeed that's killed the newspapers, it's sort of long-term trends, that they themselves were becoming increasingly sort of anachronistic and a bit weird.
Yeah, I don't think BuzzFeed has killed
that's reassuring.
The hatchet man next to me. I think that the internet generally has made available for free what was previously paid for. Newspapers used to have a gigantic monopoly. There were monolithic institutions that shouted at their readers, and the readers really either had to accept it or go to very few other places elsewhere. So that giant monolithic, shouty kind of institution of a newspaper has had to weather the complete reversal in terms of how information is traded. I mean, advertising is another critical point. The problems for newspapers like The Mirror and The Express, and you can see, you have to end, either you have to say, we'll run them at a massive loss because we want to, or you cash cow them. You basically say, advertising is doing this, it will never change, we will gradually cut the product, cut the journalists, cut the quality, we'll lose more readers, so we'll cut more, so we'll lose more readers, so we'll cut more, so we'll lose more readers, and ultimately you keep your cost base as low as possible, just above, just beneath the line of your income. Now that's doable. It has one natural conclusion, which is eventually you kill the product, and The Mirror is in that cycle, The Express is in the cycle, The Star is in that cycle. The extent to which other papers get into that cycle depends on where they can find their source of revenue elsewhere. So newspapers have been absolutely battered by a complete fundamental change in how information is traded. And information, the news of the day, is traded for nothing on the internet. So a product that is based on giving you the news of the day with a spin, with a great polemical partisanship, has lost a lot of its cause for people buying it. And that is a fundamental change in how the product is consumed.
Yeah. I mean, hands up anybody who has bought a physical newspaper in the last week.
Wow, that's pretty good, actually, yeah.
Yeah, you dinosaurs. How many people here have a digital subscription? They've either bought an app or...
Saved. It's all right. It's going to be okay.
And the rest of you bastards, why...
Why are you here?
Why are you here? That's right. You just come to gloat, haven't you?